This is Central Nebraska's most listened to all sports radio station.
We always parade winners around here.
From 1460 KXPN and 1550 KICS, you're listening to Central Nebraska's ESPN Radio Superstation.
For any of you who have listened in the past, you know that I am not a radio-trained personality, so we are just going by the seat of our pants.
It's time for the Tri-Cities' number one sports show. You're listening to the Doug and Daddy Show.
Victoria and Zaretska, you know, these Russians, they need to buy a vowel. Let me just say that. They need to buy a vowel with that first name.
Now coming to you live from the Midway Auto Dealership broadcast booth. Need a vehicle? Think Midway.com.
No. I don't think that's just it's minor. It's just a minor sin. It's a minor one. Well, I'm coming to you then for some of the major ones.
It's time for the Doug and Daddy Show.
Welcome to the Doug and Andy Show. Randy Bushcutter filling in for Doug, and joining us is Jim Lang. And Jim, good to see you. How are things going, man?
Real good. How about you?
Things are going real good after the Royals won. I'm still on the high after that thing. Hey, you know, I want to comment on that. I know the Royals coach, Ned Yost, made a pitching move that did not work, and I'll tell you what, he put himself in a heck of a dilemma there, because if they would have lost that game, people would have been upset. And there's not people that follow all 162 games. You know, there's people that just come in for the playoffs. But, you know, he did not, let's just say, he didn't play that by the book. He didn't do what by the book. And when you don't play it by the book, you know what I'm saying, is you give yourself a chance for ridicule. But I'll tell you what, the people that follow the Royals, you also don't steal third base when you're down 7-3, and you don't steal seven bases. You wait for hits and hits and hits. And, hey, the Royals are a team that don't get a lot of extra base hits. He knows his lineup, and when he does that type of stuff, I thought the Billy Butler move was way worse than the pitcher. The pitcher, you're hoping you're going to get somebody out. I'm not defending his decision on the pitcher. I'm not going to defend it completely. But what I am saying is he did make some moves later on in that game that sure helped the Royals win that by making switches. And he made a 25-man roster. He got the speed guys on there. They brought a guy up from AAA, AA, that's very fast. You know, this guy might be able to help us win a game. The Royals took 9 pitchers. The Oakland A's only had 8 in case some of these games go extra innings. He took a player. He brought in a guy to pitch hit in the 9th. He got a single. You know, I mean, he just picked that roster. Yes, what I'm saying, by picking the roster and picking the 25 guys, he had the guys he needed. So I thought he made some good moves, too. And, I guess that was my main point. I wanted to stick up for him a little bit because win or lose, once it got to the 9th and 10th inning, I thought he did enough to give him a chance to win.
Well, failure is always an orphan, and success, everybody gets to kind of grasp in on. I did not really care for the delayed double steal and what they were trying to do with Billy Butler there. However, against the same pitcher a week ago, the Angels did it. It worked to perfection, and it got him to unravel. So, to me, it's worth a shot, because you might very well get one of the best postseason pitchers in the last 5 or 6 years to unravel. You know, if that happens to him, he may very well unravel. So it's worth a shot. You're risking an out to try to unravel one of the best pitchers. I mean, I get that. It didn't work, and I get doing that. But you've got such a good bullpen. I honestly think you got those 3 guys. Usually they're the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings. But you can extend that a little bit. Ask each one of them to get 4 outs instead of 3 and be able to cover it that way. And again, it's always easy to Monday morning quarterback it. But you're exactly right. A lot of the things he did with the roster has worked out exactly the way Ned Yost had hoped it would.
Yeah, and then again, if you said what he did, then he's not going by the book, because he's done it for 162 games. He's had the guy pitch the 8th, and the same guy pitched the ninth, and they're only asked to get three outs. They're not one time have they been asked to get four outs.
Right.
You know what? So what I'm saying is, if you're going to do it that way and you're going to play it by the book, I mean, that's the way he's going to be consistent. He's going to try to do that way. But I kind of think in the playoffs you got to play it a little different because you're not going to throw five pitchers. You know, in the playoffs with the days off and the travel days and, mm-hmm. and the things like that, the series is you need three really good pitchers. And that's why the teams that have three really good ones will have an advantage over or the teams that don't. Yeah.
And this is a long-term deal, too. I don't know necessarily if the Royals, they're certainly not a favorite to win series they're in. They're not a favorite to win the ALCS if they got into that. They wouldn't be a favorite in the World Series. Not this year, anyway. You know, it's a young enough team that perhaps next year, the year after that, that's kind of their window. And so you bring in a rookie pitcher like that, and maybe he'll have some success. Maybe he'll grow from it. And even with that failure, it's going to toughen him up. They're going to learn what to do a little bit better and that sort of thing. So, I mean, again, you have to look at the overall long-term process. And sometimes when you look at it just in a one-game deal, you get under a little bit more scrutiny. And when you put it under a microscope, you may not recognize the big picture.
Well, yeah. And, you know, the other thing, he's coaching a team. He's coaching a team that has hit the least amount of home runs of all 30 major league teams. I mean, they only had 95 home runs.
Yeah.
So, and they didn't have an extra base hit until the 12th inning. I mean, they went the first 11 innings, they were all singles and walks. That's the only way they got on base was singles and walks, the Royals I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And in the 12th inning, they got a triple off the wall, and then they ended the game kind of with a double. But they didn't have an extra base hit for 11 straight innings. So when you do that, you got to take a chance, and you got to risk by stealing bases, because then those singles then turn into doubles. And it's not even by the same player. I mean, that's what's amazing about the fact that a guy singles Billy Butler or somebody, he'd have to pull him in the eighth inning now because of his speed. So now you don't get to bat him for the rest of the game.
Right.
You know, we had so many players that came in and got a pinch hit single, and that's all they did. They went over and sat down on the bench again. And that's a tough thing to do, too. I mean, being sitting on the bench for 9 or 10 innings, come in and get your single, run to first, and then somebody else will still second for you. So, you know, what I'm saying is a lot more managing than some coaches have to do. When you got a pretty good player that doubles,
and, hey, Mike Trout is easy to manage.
There you go.
Yeah, you just kind of let him go. I absolutely agree with you. And again, you kind of mentioned they have people who know going in, your job is we're going to pinch hit. You're going to come in and pinch hit later on. That's going to be your job. That's going to be your role. Be ready for that. It's a lot easier to be ready for that when you're told that a day, a week, a month in advance, and you can kind of prepare yourself and you kind of grow into that. The pitching lineup tonight, Jared Weaver and Jason Vargas. Vargas for the Royals and Weaver, obviously, for the Angels. They played together last year for the Angels, and then 10 years ago, they were both members of Long Beach State. They were a couple of dirtbags, so they know each other, they're friends, and tonight they will be rivals. Weaver with a 3.59 ERA for the Angels, Vargas with a 3.71, so pretty good even matchup when you take a look at ERA and that sort of thing. But you start looking at the Angels lineup, Josh Hamilton is your number 7 hitter. I mean, wrap your mind around that idea that Josh Hamilton is the number 7 hitter. The DH bats 8th in the lineup for the Angels. I mean, that's just how deep their batting order is. Going to be a tough task tonight for the next 3 to 5 games. Going to be a tough task for the Royals and that pitching staff playing out in Anaheim, because that offensive lineup for the Angels is killer. And going back to what you said, I expect when the Royals get on, they're going to try to run like mad, because they've got to try to balance the books somehow a little bit, and they're going to have to do it with their speed.
Yeah, and they won't be able to steal as much because of the catchers. You know, they took advantage of the Oakland A's catchers. They probably won't be able to run as much. Plus, you have to get on base to run.
Right.
You know, and, you know, the one thing about this series is the Angels have got a lineup, like you said, that can hit a lot of balls out of the ballpark. So, you know, boy, you're going to have to score some runs to win. But, hey, you know, the Royals split with them this year. You know, they played 6 games, went 3-3. So, and, you know, any true Royal fans is going to be happy because you you got there. You know, you're gonna after you know about the sixth inning of the game yesterday. He was in a conflict. You just win this one. That's all I'll ask for. You know. Yeah. So yeah.
Well, I was always greedy. You know, I mean, as a fan, and I'm a Royals fan. I'm a much bigger Cincinnati Reds fan, but I'm a Royals fan, and you know, I'm greedy. You know, why not us? You know, momentum is kind of a big thing over the years. We've seen a lot of wild card teams in the last. Since they instituted the wild card, a lot of teams get in by the skin of their teeth, get hot, and run the table. I mean, I think we've had five World Series champions that were a wild card. I mean, I'm not overly comfortable with that number, but it's been quite a few. And if you get hot at the right time, and certainly I would say momentum is on the side of the folks that have baby blue uniforms hanging up in their closet. You know, I if not us, you know, somebody's got to win it. Why not the Royals? Why not?
Good point.
Yeah, and again, who knows? Again, Vargas and Weaver. And by the way, we should point out that we've been following the Royals all season long on the Breeze. We'll continue to do so in the postseason. They will be on tonight with absolutely no problems at all. We don't have to arrange anything to make that happen, but the Breeze will be the home for the Royals throughout the course of the playoffs as well. They'll have that game. First pitch is set for 8:07 tonight. Pregame will start at 7:30 tonight on the Breeze. Also, Friday night, even though we do have hockey, we do have high school football, again, the Royals will be on the Breeze tomorrow night as well. Push everything back about a half hour. Pregame will start at 8 tomorrow night with the first pitch at 8:37. With that, we're going to be moving where you're going to find the Storm tomorrow. The Storm will be on our other station, Classic Hits 98.9 FM. They'll be on after the Kearney High Lincoln East football game, so we'll still have high school football on. There'll be an early kickoff in Lincoln. That game will kick off at 4:30. Pregame will be at 4, and that'll be followed by Sioux Falls traveling to Tri-City to take on the Storm. The Storm's home opener, and then of course the Royals don't play on Saturday, so we'll have complete coverage on the Breeze of Husker football, beginning with pregame starting at 2:00 on Saturday, and then the Royals game again on Sunday will again be on the Breeze 94.5. So we'll have all those Royals games for you on the Breeze, as well as we'll also have coverage of Tri-City Storm hockey. But we're going to be moving it both Friday and Saturday. Storm hockey will be on Classic Hits 98.9 FM. Thursday, always a great time to start talking about football. We've been talking a little baseball. It's also a great opportunity to hit up some appetizers over at the Chicken Coop. They have extended specials today. Come on down for discounted appetizers throughout the course of the day, starting at 2:00 from 2 until midnight. You'll get nachos for $3.99, potato skins also $3.99, porky style potato skins, which means you get to add a little pulled pork on that, $4.99 for that. Their onion rings, which are delicious, a large order for $3.99. Buffalo chips also $3.99, and the Southwest Munchers also $3.99. Again, that'll start at 2:00, running through midnight at the Chicken Coop. Well, it's not 2:00 yet. You're probably thinking about what to do for lunch. Well, they have a Thursday lunch special. The Poi Boy Shrimp Sandwich. Get your choice of a side for only $6.49. Only $6.49 from 11 to 4 today at the Chicken Coop in Kearney. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll start talking a little Husker football. And obviously, we got to talk a little bit about Sparty. And to do that, we'll talk with Paul Conendike from Spartan Magazine. We'll talk with Paul when we come back right after this.
Family Physical Therapy and Sports Center, getting you back in the game of life. With two locations in Kearney, the Ortho Clinic at the Kearney Clinic and the Rehab Clinic at the ENT Building. Family Physical Therapy and Sports Center, excellence in rehabilitation. A very proud supporter of the area athletes in and out of the game. Locations serving Kearney, Lexington, Minden, Ravenna, and Wood River. Family Physical Therapy and Sports Center.
So you work late, golf, play ball, whatever. You're thinking,
if I could just a great happy hour, I got something good to eat after 10 at night.
Well, Jersey says come on in Monday through Thursday, 9 to 11, and enjoy late night happy hour. For everyone who wishes they hadn't missed happy hour. And they're serving food till 11.
Seriously, why didn't I think of this?
Jersey Sports Bar, your true neighborhood sports bar where the grill and the game are always on. North 2nd Avenue, Vista Point Shopping Center.
ESPN ESPN Radio Superstation 1460 and 1550 Weather Eye Weather is brought to you by Farm Bureau Insurance agents Rich Peters and Matt Myers on North 2nd Avenue in Kearney.
Health insurance is changing. You have new options. But which one is right for you? As authorized independent agents for Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Nebraska, Farm Bureau Financial Service agents Rich Peters and Matt Myers know health insurance and can help you understand your options and the differences between them. Contact Rich Peters and Matt Myers and see how they can simplify the process and help you select the right health insurance policy for you and your family. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Nebraska is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association. Securities and services offered through FBL Marketing Services, LLC, affiliate Farm Bureau Financial Services.
For today, it'll be mostly cloudy. We'll have rain showers likely with high 66. We'll see wind gusts as high as 25 miles an hour. Tonight, we'll continue the chance of rain showers with a low near 39. For Friday, sunny and breezy, high of 53. Currently, it's 55.
And welcome back to the Doug and Daddy Show, our Midtown Mark Cooler question for the day. Which team will win the American League pennant? Obviously, you got four options. You'd have Kansas City, Detroit, L.A., and Baltimore. And, what do you say, Jim? I'll get your vote quick, and then I'll give the results. Who do you think is going to win the AL?
Well, I'm going to go with the Royals. There's no way I'm going to pick against them, and I actually think they have a chance. You know, after that win, they're going to be playing really with low stress. The Angels probably got the best team, but I'm still picking the Royals.
Well, Detroit got 42% of the vote, so they didn't look strictly at winning percentages. Detroit had 42% of the vote, L.A. 29, Baltimore 29, no one voted for the Royals until you did just a moment ago. Today's Midtown Mark Cooler question, how will the Huskers fare on Saturday against Michigan State? Your options are plain flat-out win. The other two options are lose and cover. They're getting 7.5 points and lose by more than 7.5 points. And joining us now to talk about his thoughts on, well, maybe not the point spread, but about the game is Paul Conendike from Spartan Magazine. Paul, thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Hey, it's good to be on.
All right, Paul, let's just kind of start. How do you kind of see this game? Can Nebraska play with Michigan State, or do you think Michigan State is just that much better than the Big Red?
No, I think Nebraska can definitely play with Michigan State. I think it's a really barometer game for both teams, but definitely Nebraska is going to score points. I think they do against everybody, and Michigan State's got to avoid giving up big plays in this one and continue to move the ball like they have. So I think you've got two head coaches in Bo Pelini and Mark Antonio with a defensive background, but I think there's going to be some points scored in this game.
Hey, Paul, I watched the Oregon-Michigan State game on TV, and Michigan State looked really good in that second quarter. Thought they looked, in fact, extremely well. When I watched the game, I thought they looked like a team that could run the table almost like they did last year when they got voted, in the top five and won the Rose Bowl and had some success. What do you think broke down in that third and fourth quarter?
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with lack of depth. Michigan State had a couple of key injuries in the defensive line going into that game, so they're playing with a rotation of six defensive linemen, and against a tempo-based spread like that, I think that was a major issue. I think fatigue eventually became a problem up there. It was about 95 was the regular temperature. It was about 120 in the field with that field turf, so I think that was an issue. Now, plus it's a timing thing. I always thought Michigan State was going to have a really hard time out there at Oregon, given the fact that they were replacing six starters on the defense, including Thorpe Award winner Darquez Denard, and you play, Oregon out in their place, second game of the season. I think what you saw out there maybe wasn't necessarily the real Michigan State. I think the second quarter was what Michigan State, feels like they're going to be, like they can be. And I also think, maybe it's not a satisfactory answer, but, Oregon was able to do some subtle things in terms of changing up some things on defense. And when a crowd is as loud as it was out there in Austin, which is kind of like an amphitheater, everything gets amplified out there as far as noise with the mountains surrounding, It's hard to make simple adjustments that you can do in your home stadium in terms of changing the play at the line of scrimmage. And I think Michigan State, kind of all of those things kind of cascaded on them. Convert a couple of fourth and ones, and I think they would have been all right. But it was not a great game for Michigan State, and I think steadily they've been moving in the right direction. And we'll see this weekend on Saturday how far they have moved in that direction, because I think Nebraska is going to test all of those areas that Oregon was able to.
Speaking with Paul Konendike of Spartan Magazine, since you kind of brought it up in terms of the fact that game is being played there at Spartan Stadium, this is only the 16th night game in the 91-year history of Spartan Stadium. They beat number 4 Wisconsin back in 2011. They beat number 24 Boise State back in 2012. This is their first night game in a couple of years. How is that stadium different at night? Is it a much more hostile environment at night than it is during the day?
I think anybody that has been to a college football game at night realizes, I don't care where you play, if you're playing a night game, it's going to get crazy. When people are allowed to tailgate from 8 in the morning till 8 at night, get a little bit lathered up, it's going to be a lot different crowd noise. And
Lathered up, I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think that's a politically correct word I can use. But, I mean, it is an awesome environment. I think it's great for college football that some of these major conference teams are playing more games at night, because it is a real experience. I remember even going back to my college days, 98, when Michigan State played Notre Dame and blew them out at night under the lights at Spartan Stadium. It was phenomenal. Then the following year, they beat Oregon. Joey Harrington was quarterback back then, but that was another great game at night. And it is just a different kind of atmosphere. It's electric in the stadium, and I think the home team feeds off that. That's why, in a game as closely matched as this, I'd have to go with Michigan State just because of I think the home field advantage.
Yeah, Jim Langer here again. I think that's a good point. And Michigan State beat a good Ohio State team last year, won the Rose Bowl, then went into Oregon and got beat. It's interesting to me. I don't think they got penalized for losing at Oregon. I mean, I'm going to be real honest with you. I mean, I think people look at just like you do, at Oregon, a team goes in there and gets beat. I didn't think Michigan State got penalized, for losing that game. Unfortunately, I think if Nebraska goes in to Michigan State, I think they're going to be penalized, and I also think if Michigan State loses at home to Nebraska, the same thing. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you, and I think, everyone's talking about how down the Big Ten is, and they're piling on the Big Ten, but they don't pile on Michigan State. I think part of that is going back to, the fact that they closed the 2013 season with back-to-back wins over top five teams. I think that has something to do with it. I think Michigan State has been pretty good out of conference under Mark D'Antonio since 2010. But absolutely, I think if you talk about if Nebraska wins this game against Michigan State, what started this chatter about them being a potential playoff team, I think that will generally ratchet up quite a bit. And I think, honestly, the best thing that could happen for the Big Ten Conference is maybe in Nebraska winning that game, because I think it would add a lot of credibility to the conference. I don't know how much credit Michigan State would get for beating Nebraska. I think really, honestly, when I look at that Nebraska team, I think they should be ranked higher than the 19. I think it's a very good team. I think they're probably penalized a little bit for that McNeese State game, just in terms of perception. I'm not sure how many people watched it, but it's an era of style points and knee-jerk reactions. And I think honestly, Nebraska is an underrated team. And this is probably, in my opinion, it's another top 10 matchup, in my opinion, for Michigan State. I think it's similar to what Oregon was.
Paul, I think you're spot on. We're talking with Paul Konendike of Spartan Magazine. I want to talk a little bit about quarterback Connor Cook. He's 54 of 78, 837 yards, 9 touchdowns, only a couple of interceptions. His efficiency rating is 192.3, good enough to lead the Big Ten and third in all of Division I FBS football. He kind of has that reputation because of that, of being a game manager. But he's a lot more than just being a game manager, isn't he?
Yeah, I would say he's got the opposite reputation around here. He's got the reputation of being a gunslinger around here, and I think you saw that last year. I think one of the challenges for him is learning how to balance the timing of when to put your team on your back and when to make throws into coverage, and you know, when to check down to running backs or make another read to hit your tight end. I think when you look at the efficiency and all that, I think it has to do probably with the quality of opponent. If you look at what he did against Eastern Michigan, he threw for like 5 of 6 for 2 touchdowns. He wasn't in there very much. Michigan State decided to get him out of the game early and play their backups, get those guys some experience. And I think the same thing to a certain extent against Wyoming. He's been very good. His receivers have been outstanding. I think if you look at maybe the uptick in if you look at the improvement in his numbers in terms of the efficiency numbers, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he was able to work with the same receivers all summer long. Those receivers knew who their quarterback was going to be. So whether it's player organized 7-on-7s, it wasn't receivers trying to get work done with 3 or 4 quarterbacks. It was receivers working with him. And the same thing with him. I think the confidence from knowing he was the guy, then all of a sudden, well, what are you working on in the summer? You're working on building chemistry as well as your mechanics. I think he's a lot better mechanically. And I think some of the things that he's really improved on is if you look at the games, I think he's doing a lot better job at throwing against a run or throwing on the run where they could roll him out a little bit. And that might be really big in this game because they're going to want to stay away from Randy Gregory, who can absolutely be a beast to quarterbacks. And I think his ability to move a little bit and throw the football might come into play in this game.
Paul, that's a great point. I've always had respect for Michigan State about substituting their players out. I'm not saying they're not running up the score because their backups are continuing to play hard and do what they do, but they do not get their stats against the poor teams. They get their stats when they're playing against the good teams, and I think Nebraska kind of does the same thing. You know, Abdullah only carried the ball twice in the second half against Illinois, or he's probably going to get possibly 350 or 400 yards rushing. So I agree with you totally on that and that remark. One thing I'll tell you, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but when we played McNeese State, guess who did not play in that game? Randy Gregory.
Right, absolutely. That's a huge absence. I mean, he's a game changer. I think a lot of people nationally look at stats of whether it's Randy Gregory or Shalik Calhoun, and you're looking at sack totals. That's what everyone's looking at. And my thing is, not the sack totals, but what do those guys do in terms of how they cause offensive coordinators to adjust their schemes? And let's face it, both those guys, Shalik Calhoun over at Michigan State and Randy Gregory, they have to be accounted for on the football field.
On the other side of the ball, obviously a lot of attention for Nebraska's offense is with Amir Abdullah, who has kind of gotten into that conversation for winning the Heisman Trophy. What is the game plan from the Michigan State perspective in terms of, I don't know if you necessarily stop him, but at least slowing down Amir Abdullah that Nebraska can't put the game on his back and let him carry him to victory?
Well, I think with Amir Abdullah, I mean, he's a guy, first off, the thing that jumps out when you watch him on tape is the balance. I mean, it's cat-like. And he covers ground quickly, but his ability to, stay on his feet after that first hit, ball forward for a few yards, it's tremendous. And if you're Michigan State defense, you are gonna give up yards to Amir Abdullah. I think the thing that, that this defense is, kind of built on is avoiding, not giving up the big play. And we've seen against Nebraska, there's been plenty of times where Michigan State has given up the big play. I think back to 2012, the last time Nebraska was at Michigan State. Taylor Martinez ripped off a couple really big plays. And maybe that's the difference. And maybe this Nebraska team with Tommy Armstrong isn't the guy that's going to hit you for an 80-yard run. So I think the whole key for Michigan State on defense, specifically with Abdullah, is preventing the big play. And there are going to be some plays that happen. I think Nebraska does a great job of spreading teams out and running physically with the field spread out. I think that's one of the things that separates Nebraska from a lot of the other tempo-based spread teams out there. Nebraska has a physical brand of spread football, which is rare, and it's very difficult to play against.
Yeah, you talk about that game a couple years ago, and I'm assuming you were there. Michigan State Nebraska was down 24-14, I believe. Michigan State intercepts a pass and goes 98 yards for a touchdown. But a Michigan State player and a Nebraska player kind of got into it during the return, you know, and they called it back. And it was probably when you looked at the whole scheme of things, it was probably one of the most important calls ever in a football game to turn it around.
Yeah, absolutely. If you go back to that play, it was Johnny Adams, former Michigan State defensive back, all Big Ten first teamer. You know, he's jacked up Kenny Bell on the return. And, you know, ironically, it was kind of funny because, you know, Kenny Bell was kind of loafing on that play. And really, if you look at it, I think it was a legal football play. It looked worse than, you know, it looked bad because Kenny Bell wasn't paying attention, didn't have his head on the swivel, and he got jacked up pretty good. But it did, you know, it would have been 31-14. And Nebraska would have had a hard time coming back from that. I think that was really in a season full of close losses for Michigan State, that 2012 season. I think that was probably the toughest to stomach for Michigan State fans, for the coaching staff. But I also think that all of those close losses by 7 points or less, I think they really kind of galvanized the team and brought them together. And I'm not so certain without games like that in 2012 that Michigan State would have been mentally prepared to do what they did in 2013, kind of weather the storm early in terms of offensive struggles and then just kind of keep on going game after game and finally win in the Rose Bowl. So I think, you know, those tough times, I think they kind of prepare you for, you know, when you're ready for it, if you use them to your advantage, I think they can turn into good times later on.
Final couple minutes here with Paul Konendike of Spartan Magazine. 2 years ago, Le'Veon Bell ran across Nebraska, 188 yards, a couple of touchdowns the last time they played at Spartan Stadium. Last year, of course, the 5 turnovers in that game. But Jeremy Langford had 151 yards and a couple of touchdowns on the ground. Is there anybody from Michigan State that's going to be able to do that again this year? I mean, the running numbers for the Spartans this year hasn't been as good. That running game, will they be able to do that against Nebraska this time?
Well, that's a good question. I think, you know, getting offensive lineman Connor Cruz back, you know, he came back against Wyoming. That was big for Michigan State. Jeremy Langford's numbers are down, but I will say this. He hasn't played very much. And, you know, he had the injury in week one, you know, where he had his ankle twisted under the pile by a Jacksonville State player. That didn't help. He wasn't 100% at Oregon. And he is now. And he hasn't carried a lot this year. He's been held out. And last week, he had his first 100-yard game, and I think at 10 carries. But that was big for him. And I think one of the things, you know, you got to look at with Michigan State, some of the changes to the running game that they've done is I think they've ratcheted up the number of jet sweeps, misdirections, and end arounds, and that type of thing with the athletic receivers they have. And I think that's the benefit of doing that. And we saw it a little bit last year, but the benefit of doing that is you know, what you've seen defenses do against Michigan State is really creep up guys in the box and try to clog up that middle and, you know, not respect the outside. With some of the plays that Michigan State's been able to do in terms of the misdirections and the outside running stuff, it's kind of softened that up, and it's led to some big plays in the Michigan State running game. So I think that's an element to look at. The other thing I think that maybe people aren't talking about in relation to this game coming up is, you know, when Nebraska plays that physical man-to-man defense on third down, it opens up some opportunities for some quarterback scrambles, and because anytime you turn your back to the offense, you know, it opens up some run lanes that maybe wouldn't be there otherwise. So I'd look for some of those loose plays to see what happens in that. And I think the running game, in answer to your question, I think the running game is coming along, but this is going to be the best. The biggest test so far for Michigan State, and I think they're looking forward to trying to run the football against a quality Big Ten opponent.
Yeah, Paul, I think you hit it right on the head. When I look at this football game, I really don't think Nebraska will be able to stop Michigan State in any one thing. I think they're going to get some stops. Don't get me wrong. I think Michigan State will be forced to punt a couple times. But I don't think we are definitely going to be able to stop them. If Michigan State can stop the run, and McNeese State did. McNeese State actually stopped the run a little bit. And they basically in the second half, if they can stop that run, and they've been able to do that against some pretty good teams, if they can do that, this thing could get ugly.
Well, I think one of the things with Michigan State, at least last year, you know, and this year I think they'll get to that point. Is they've done a good, you know, they did a good job of, even against the good teams that were able to move the ball, they did a good job of keeping those teams lower than their average. I think if Michigan State eliminates big plays, you know, and doesn't allow too many chunk yards, the explosive plays 25 yards or more, I think they've got a good chance to win. And you know, I think going back to the crowd noise, you know, what Michigan State experienced at Oregon, where Connor Cook, you know, you can't always, when the crowd is absolutely crazy, it's hard to communicate simple changes at the line of scrimmage based on what you're reading pre-snap. So that might be another, you know, that might be another factor in this. It might be easier to contain the run game if Nebraska's kind of left one-dimensional by not being able to audible in and out of play calls at the line of scrimmage. But I think, you know, Michigan State would love to turn this into a game where, you know, Tommy Armstrong has to beat them with his arm. And I'm telling you, he's a much better quarterback than he was last year. And I like what he does throwing the deep ball. But I think if you're Michigan State, you'd still like to take your chances on having Tommy Armstrong beat you rather than having Amir Abdullah beat you.
Which does kind of bring me to another question. We've talked a lot about Randy Gregory, outstanding defensive player for Nebraska, obviously, but a lot of people think that Shalik Calhoun may very well be the defensive player of the year in the conference. Is Shalik one of those guys that kind of sees this and says, you know what, I need to outperform Randy Gregory? Is there going to be kind of a whatever you can do, I can do better kind of thing coming from Calhoun?
I think that's a human nature type thing with everybody who's a competitor. But I also think that one of the things that's harped on in Michigan State's defense is that, I mean, the phrase they always use is, you know, a Spartan warrior's strength is a man standing next to him, and is a warrior standing next to him. I think the philosophy of this defense, and one of the reasons why when it's clicking, it's so effective, is that it's not a one-man show, that everyone has to play their assignment, and there's a lot of trust involved. I think if you're Shalik Calhoun and you get into kind of a deal where I've got to outperform Gregory and you start freelancing and that kind of stuff, that's when things, the wheels fall off, you know, against a team like Nebraska. You know, I think he, you know, we've seen that in the past. If you're not playing your assignment, if you're not in your gap, if you're trying to do too much, you know, that's why these modern day offenses work as well as they do against undisciplined teams.
Hey, Paul, you know, changing the subject real quick, you know, the Detroit Tigers and the Kansas City Royals had a great, you know, end of the season, seeing who's going to win. Hey, they might play again. Hey, same thing with Nebraska and Michigan State. You know, I mean, they could see each other again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've said this a couple times this week on other shows, even on like an on-camera that we did for SpartanMag.com, our website. But I think there's a really good chance when you look at it, that Michigan State and Nebraska could play again in that title game. In that aspect, if you're Michigan State, you don't have to win this game to win a Big Ten championship, because, you know, all your opponents are in front of you. But I think absolutely, if you're Michigan State, you have to win this game to stay in the national conversation for one of those four playoff spots. You know, I thought, you know, Michigan State last year, they had a big opener at Iowa, and that was a key. That was a key kind of to vaulting them to a Big Ten championship. I think Nebraska, that was a better Iowa team at that time than people were giving them credit for. I think this Nebraska team is obviously better than that Iowa team was. But I think in terms of national spotlight, even though Nebraska is not ranked as high as they should be, in my opinion, I think just being in prime time, you know, in front of a national audience is going to be big for both programs and for the Big Ten. This is a big game. And, you know, As a fan of Big Ten football, I truly hope that, you know, this is a true showcase game, like I think it's going to be.
Paul,
I got to get something in there about my Tigers though. I think those Tigers are going to play the Royals again, and you know, that's going to be a heck of a series. Good buddy of mine, Tim Allen, Michigan State's director of football operations, grew up in Kansas area, and he is a diehard Royals fan, so I know he's going to be rooting for the Royals.
Paul, I've cheered against Detroit for 162 games, but now I'm a Detroit Tiger fan for these next five. But as soon as we play you again, I got to go back with my royal blue.
All right. Well, when it comes to that time, we'll put a wager up for some drinks.
I'm in. Yeah. Hey, Paul Konedike from Spartan Magazine. Real quick, what's your prediction? What do you think is going to happen Saturday?
I think it's going to be a game I'll just go ahead and say, I'll say Michigan State 28. Let's go 35-28 Michigan State. I think they're going to have a hard time slowing down Nebraska's offense. I think they're going to do just enough, and they're going to be able to score some points, against a team that's pretty darn explosive. I expect a good one at Spartan Stadium. It's going to be a lot of fun.
One last thing I have to ask you about this. Foe Pelini and Mike Sadler have this ongoing relationship where they tweet back and forth some of the best stuff on Twitter. Do you follow that? Is there much discussion about that in Sparty land there? Because it really is one of the best things on Twitter.
Yeah, I do follow that. I'm a big fan of fake Bo Pelini or faux Bo Pelini. The guy cracks me up. I think my wife gets sick of it when I'm sitting there after covering a game at noon and I'm looking at Twitter and I say, hey, you won't believe what faux Bo Pelini said. But, I like that. Mike Sadler's a great guy, a good ambassador for Michigan State and for the Big Ten. And that's one of those fun things. That's the fun side of social media. There's a lot of negative to it, but that kind of stuff, that's good times. I like that.
Hey, Paul, it's always great to get caught up, and hopefully there'll be a rematch down the road, and we'll have a chance to talk to you again.
Yeah, I get a feeling there will be.
All right, and I hope you're right, Paul. Thanks for joining us.
Take care.
All right, Paul Konendike of Spartan Magazine, he really does know his stuff. He's one of the better interviews that we have on the Doug and Dodie Show, and we got some pretty good ones, and knows a little bit about the Tigers and the Royals as well. I hope he's right in terms of the Royals and the Tigers getting together, and I hope he's wrong on his prediction for the game on Saturday.
Well, Michigan State, this year they beat Jacksonville State, Eastern Michigan, and Wyoming. Those are their three wins. So they're basing everything on, what their preseason predictions were and how they ended last year. I think Michigan State's a good team. If anybody has a chance, just look online at Michigan State's schedule. It is absolutely perfect. They have their two tough games are Nebraska and Ohio State, and they're both at home. They're both at Michigan State. Nebraska's two tough games are Michigan State and Wisconsin, and they're both on the road, yeah. And if you get down to the third game, it'd be Iowa, and that's on the road. So Nebraska's schedule was not kind to them this year. I'll guarantee you, if Nebraska runs the table here and can get into that, they're going to get some respect from the media and from the national attention. There's no way Nebraska will go undefeated. If Nebraska does go undefeated, there is no way they're not going to be in the playoff system because of the two road wins they'll have to have.
And I'd even add on to what you're saying. For Michigan State, Michigan is always a tough game. They also have that game at home. Even though Michigan's not playing really well, that's an in-state rival, they still would play that game at home. The winner of this game is the only Big Ten team that has a chance of being in the Final Four. Whoever wins this game Saturday has to win out, including a potential rematch. That is the only way a Big Ten team is playing for the national championship. I just don't think Michigan State with two losses could do it, and I don't think Nebraska, unless they go undefeated, is going to be able to go from number 19 and pass all those SEC teams that everybody seems to be in love with to get into the Final Four.
I agree. Ohio State, possibly for some reason, if they could go ahead and run the whole thing, and you get a lot of upsets. But I understand what you're saying.
There would be a lot of caveats for that to happen.
Exactly, because Ohio State's going to have the one loss, and it was at home, and it was against Virginia Tech. That loss in itself will keep them probably 6 or 7. You know, that's about as good as they're going to move up. They have to have so many things happen. And Mississippi and Alabama are playing, and one's going to lose and one's going to win, and the winner of that game is going to be ranked in the top 5, and the loser is going to be 6 through 10. That's where they're going to stay.
You lost to an SEC team. That doesn't count. You beat an SEC team. Well, that means a whole lot.
You're exactly right. So I understand what you're saying. This Stanford-Notre Dame game, the loser of that one's probably going to be out in the national picture too. Stanford's mm-hmm. playing Notre Dame. They're not going to give Notre Dame's kind of like Nebraska with the respect they're giving them. And so anytime Notre Dame gets beat, they're going to go back, you haven't beat anybody for a long time, et cetera. And that's what they're kind of doing to Nebraska right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Did get a quality email here from Ryan. Ryan says, I'm tired of hearing, can Michigan State stop Abdullah? The answer is simply no. In fact, I don't believe any defense can stop him. Can you slow down Abdullah? Of course. Holding him to 100 yards would be a win for any defense. I think the big question is, can the Nebraska D be effective against a much-improved Spartan offense? They can run and can pass. Nebraska can go -1 in the turnover battle and win. If they are -5 in the turnover margin like last year against Sparty, who had a better defense than this year, and Nebraska lost by only 13. how the DBs play and what they can do with the real RG, Randy Gregory, reference obviously to RG3. Maybe we should call him RG4. But what they do with the real RG will be critical. If Nebraska loses, it'll be because they beat themselves. That's what Ryan says. I think it's a great matchup. I think Nebraska can play well and lose to Michigan State. Michigan State is good enough. If Nebraska plays a good game, they can lose. If they play a great game, and Nebraska has had a lot of success over Michigan State, that win last year was the only time Michigan State has ever beaten Nebraska. You know, they somehow, for whatever reason, they play Michigan State very, very well, but they still could play well and lose at Spartan Stadium.
You know, I'll tell you, these turnovers are really interesting about a turnover. It's kind of when they happen in the game and what down it was on. I mean, what I'm saying, you're on the 50-yard line and you decide to throw the Hail Mary on the last play of the first half, and they intercept it. What difference does it make? I mean, that's why you threw the thing. I mean, you were just taking a chance. You know, I mean, so that turnover really doesn't hurt you that much. You know, that's not, I mean, a turnover. But what happens with the turnover? If you fumble, and did they jump on it and recover it, or do you fumble and they pick it up and run it back 56 yards for a touchdown? Those are the things that kill you. It's what happens with these turnovers. What, you know, if they score with them, what they do with them with the turnover. So I agree with what he said about the negative turnovers. It's just what happens with, and the special teams are so critical. Well, I didn't ask him because we had a long conversation with him, but you know, it could get down to kicks field goals and who doesn't kick field goals. It could get down to that. You know, what field goal kicker's hot or what punter's hot. You know, sometimes something goes on side of the field, a blocked punt. I mean, there's a lot of things that can happen in this game if it gets close.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be so tight that it is going to come down to something like that. And again, a 50-yard, if Armstrong throws it deep for Bell and it's intercepted on third down, 50 yards down the field with no return, that's a punt. You know, that doesn't hurt. You're absolutely right. But last year, Michigan State scored 24 points off of Nebraska's 5 turnovers. And so they were pretty effective in terms of turning those into other points. And that's really what doomed Nebraska last year. If it wasn't for that, to a great extent, they outplayed Michigan State last year.
Yeah, you know, when I look back at that game a little bit, and unlike the Iowa game really killed us on turnovers. But Michigan State actually moved the ball on Nebraska. But what happened, Nebraska basically would move the ball about 60 yards, have a turnover, and Michigan State would score. Well, then Nebraska got the ball back. So Michigan State's offense never got to play much.
Yeah.
So we really don't know what Michigan State's offense was going to do, because when they got the ball, it was just such a short field, or they were scoring off these turnovers. You know what I mean? So right away, Michigan State maybe could have had some success with Nebraska, but we don't know because they didn't play that much. They didn't get the ball that much.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of stuff going on Saturday. Obviously, the Michigan State-Nebraska game, which we've been talking about here for 15 or 20 minutes. The Lopers are at home. You got the taste of Kearney over at UNK. And don't forget the Kearney Oktoberfest. That's coming up this Saturday at the Buffalo County Fairgrounds. First year we've had this event. There's been stuff similar in the past, but it'll be at the Buffalo County Fairgrounds. Kearney Oktoberfest, a celebration of Nebraska's craft brew industry, which has been growing over the last several years because, quite frankly, Nebraska brews some pretty darn good beer. They have over 15 craft brewers that will be there on tap, great German food, and live music. Of course, they will have the Nebraska-Michigan State game on several big screens out the Buffalo County Fairgrounds, so we'll be there. And don't forget that Thunderhead will be rolling out their brand-new beer, and it's so good they named it after themselves, Shabins. It'll be a filtered beer, very, very good. Had it on tap, and they'll be putting it out in cans coming up, but they're really rolling it out this weekend at Kearney Oktoberfest at the Buffalo County Fairgrounds. Tickets are currently on sale right now at the Kearney Chamber of Commerce office, or you can give them a call at 237-3101. There's a VIP hour from 4 to 5 with a complimentary mug, sampling, music by the Leo Lonnie Trio, as well as drink tickets. VIP tickets are $30, and again, it comes with a $15 complimentary mug, or a mug that you could buy for about $15. Standard admission is from 5 to 11, and the cost to get in is only $5. Drink tickets would then be only $3 each. We mentioned the commemorative mugs, $15, and music by Acid Polka and One Horse Town. Nothing really gets you thinking you're going to go dance like Acid Polka. We would point out to you that absolutely no one under the age of 21 is allowed to either pick up or purchase the ticket, so it is a 21 and over event. But Kearney Oktoberfest at the Buffalo County Fairgrounds, and again, VIP hour starts from 4 to 5. The general admittance begins at 5 o'clock. The Husker game will be on. A lot of great entertainment, and hopefully Nebraska will play well, and you can drink some great Nebraska beers in the process. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk some fantasy football with Luke Hoover. That's coming up next on the Doug and Daddy Show right after this.
Kearney Crete and Block and Christensen Concrete Products have been supplying Kearney, Grand Island, and Hastings with quality concrete and masonry supplies for a combined 140 years of experience, including the new showroom in Grand Island on West Highway 30. Stop in today and let the professionals help you enhance the beauty and the value of your home and business. Kearney Crete and Block and Christensen Concrete Products, building generations one block at a time.
At First National Bank, we believe customer interactions are based on relationships, not transactions. That's why we created First National Checking, to prove our commitment to you and the community. This is not a one-time offer, but a demonstration of our ongoing dedication to put customers first. No hidden fees, no surprises, no hoops to jump through. For honest banking with no strings attached, visit one of our offices today. First National Bank, member FDIC.
Hey, Nebraska, our triple play tire sale has been so successful here at Big O Tires, we've decided to extend it one more week. So through this Saturday, October 4th, with every new set of tires, you'll get free complete installation, an all-wheel alignment, and a standard 5-quart oil and filter change. Buy four new tires at Big O and you'll get $170 of added value, and it's good on all sizes and brands. Now through this Saturday, only at Big O Tires, the team you trust.
To some, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. Others say it's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. But everyone can agree that the uniforms and equipment you play in make a big difference in how you play and how you win. That's why TM Sporting Goods gives you that winning edge with top name brands and personal service. From seasoned pros like Steve Baradol and Tino Martinez. TM Sporting Goods, on the bricks, 2217 Central, downtown Kearney. TM Sporting Goods, a division of Pro Team Design.
Make it Fonner Park's Finish Line Restaurant and Sports Lounge for fantastic food, full bar, live draw keno, and coast-to-coast thoroughbred racing. Daytime action starts at 12 noon. Continuous tonight racing. Saturday, watch and wager on 27 stake races from 6 tracks totaling over $14 million. So race to the finish line. Number one for food, fun, and Husker football.
Welcome back here on the Doug and Daddy Show. Time now for one of our favorite features, and that is to talk every week a little fantasy football with Luke Hoover from RotoWire. And again, our fantasy football report brought to you in part by Cunningham's Journal. Don't forget to get signed up for our Cunningham's Fantasy Football Contest. Just log on to our website at ESPNSuperstation.com, and all the details will be right there, and we'll get you some more details on that here in just a little bit. But we want to get right into talking to Luke. Luke, how you doing? Good to talk to you again.
Doing great. Really looking forward to tonight's game and kind of anxious to see how that young Minnesota backfield does against Green Bay's run defense.
It does bring me to kind of a philosophical question. Obviously, people going into the season had Adrian Peterson, and what do you do with him? Do you just drop him and nobody pick him up, or is he worth, if you can kind of stuff him in the back of your roster somewhere and hold on to him on your bench, do you keep him around? What do you think we ought to do? Is he going to play again?
At this point, unless you're in one of those dynasty or keeper formats where you can hang on to a guy going into next season, I think he should be dropped in any other league. I just don't see him playing in 2014 and probably never again in a Minnesota uniform. It would be pretty surprising at this point, you know, given the circumstances and the issues with some of the Viking sponsors as well factoring in. On top of the fact that they've had two young backs both having success. So they really aren't, not to say that they're not hurting for him. He's still probably the best in the league at his position. But I just don't see him, being a factor in football this year.
They are kind of dividing up the carries there in Minnesota. Which one of those two do you think you ought to grab and kind of hold on to, or is it still kind of wait and see?
Well, if you can get either one, both are good investments. I think the rookie McKinnon, Jerick McKinnon, has more upside. He has, you know, an uncommon burst. He runs a little bit under a 4.4. You know, and while he's not a big back, he's pretty strong. You know, he can lower that shoulder. He's got some very good moves in the open field. Aviata, though, is going to be that goal line back for him, as you saw, you know, 3 touchdowns last week. He's a load to bring down, I think, about 230 to 240 range he runs. So I think it'll be a timeshare, and he'll probably, you know, finish with more points just based on his working in around the goal line. He's also a pretty capable receiver. But long-term, I really like McKinnon's upside. And, you know, one of those dynasty formats, he'd be the guy to have.
At this time of year, you know, you're starting to get the buys, you got a few injuries, that sort of thing. Is there some advice you would kind of give in terms of looking at the waiver wire and trying to freshen up your roster, maybe get people kind of rotated in there? Is there a methodology that you think makes more sense to try to find somebody that's going to be able to kind of pinch it for you, for lack of a better word, while some of your players are on bye?
You know, it really kind of depends on the state of your team. You know, you might not be one of those teams getting hit hard by injuries, and there have been a bunch, particularly at the running back position. You know, but if you're healthy, you know, if you've got some good players, some stars in that lineup every week, you know, say your record's 3-1 right now, maybe you don't. You know, if you have a guy on bye, you definitely want to make sure you have a capable backup, but I don't think you need to really push too hard on the waiver wire or make some aggressive trades or anything like that. It really comes out of circumstances, you know, as far as where you're at in your league. If you started slow, you're banged up, you're 1-3, or you haven't won a game yet, yeah, then definitely make some moves and stay active. But from a philosophical standpoint, it really more comes down to, you know, how your roster looks today. I would say worry about each week. You know, particularly, I'm kind of breaking down the season into quarters, just like an actual NFL coach might, and thinking, you know, you want to win what's best for the next two, three weeks. How am I going to win this week? But at the same time, you got to hold on to that top talent. Fortunately, there's only 2 teams on bye this week.
Yeah, and I'm one of those guys that has kind of a defensive flavor of the week. I drafted very last pick my defense in both of my leagues. When you're picking defenses, do you kind of look at the strictly matchup, trying to find that defense that's on the waiver wire that's playing the worst offense? Do you look for kind of a hot hand? How much do you factor in special teams? I need all the help I can get because I'm just losing every game by about 2 points. If I could get a little bit better defensive help, I'd be in better shape. What kind of advice can you give me?
Well, you know, and I'm the same way, rotating those defenses. This year has been tricky because you've had some pretty dramatically different performances from one week to the next. We saw with the Falcons having a monster game against Tampa Bay, and then, you know, they're getting a rookie quarterback, but they go on the road, and all of a sudden they can't do anything. You know, no turnovers, no sacks, giving up 40-plus points. So pay attention certainly to the personnel of the defense, I think, the talent level overall as a whole. You know, and then matchup is a big key factor, like you say, playing one of the weakest offenses. Generally speaking, so far this year, if you play the defense against Jacksonville or Oakland, you know, it didn't matter who that defense was. So, I mean, if you can get Pittsburgh this week going into Jacksonville, you know, that's a strong play. If you also pay attention to, like, the health of a roster, if they're starting a backup quarterback that's, you know, struggled in the past. You know, Charlie Whitehurst didn't do terribly last week, but he certainly didn't set the world on fire either. If he gets the nod again for the Titans, you might want to look at a team like Cleveland. But again, you know, paying attention to personnel, I think, is most important. You know, I actually like the Giants this week to continue staying hot. You know, they're among the league leaders in both sacks and interceptions. You know, Atlanta doesn't travel particularly well. They have more talent than people realize, I think, on that defensive side of the ball.
Speaking with Luke Hoover of RotoWire, our fantasy football report brought to you by Cunningham's Journal. All right, we got some questions that have been sent in. First of all, just simply, it says, your thoughts on Jordan Matthews, wide receiver of Philadelphia. What are your thoughts on him?
You know, I think he's a rookie wide receiver who is not in a position where he has to get relied on that strongly, you know, just yet. So he's going to be very hit or miss. You know, he's going to have those up and down games like we just saw. You know, one week he's having 2 touchdowns and catching 8 balls. The next week he's not particularly involved against a good defense, and the numbers are way down. You know, unless something were to happen to, like, a Riley Cooper,
you know, or maybe they get banged up at the tight end position. He's probably not going to be all that steady. But it's from a talent standpoint, I absolutely think he has the talent to be the number one wide receiver for Philadelphia and be a 1,000-yard guy. You know, definitely in the future. Probably not this year, though.
I think Merritt wants to follow up on it a little bit.
Well, I was just going to ask Luke another question. I have Vincent Jackson or T.Y. Hilton. Who should I put in my flex this week?
Well, I mean, Hilton has stayed really involved. You know, he's got Andrew Luck throwing the football, so that's certainly an upgrade for him. But at the same time, you know, Vincent Jackson saw 10 targets last week. He struggled to get on the same page with Glennon, but he's caught a touchdown from him each week. I like him to have a big day. You know, they got to go into New Orleans where the Saints typically put up points, so I think that could become a shootout. Mike Evans being hurt just ups the amount of targets that Jackson will probably see. I'd give him a slight nod, slight edge.
A question that was sent in via our inbox from the Den Popper inbox. In a standard scoring system, looking for a flex player, Roddy, Ahmad Bradshaw, Ivory, or Kiri Robinson in the flex?
If it's a standard league, the safest of those, you know, that group is probably Ahmad Bradshaw because of how he's been involved in that offense and, you know, his involvement particularly in the red zone. You know, he's got, in just the last 3 weeks, he's caught 4 touchdown passes, which is pretty remarkable because I think in his career he only had 3 previously. But even though he's not seeing the touches that a guy like Chris Ivory is, he's, you know, he's just been too consistent, particularly down in close. I also do like Roddy White, though. You know, as I expect Atlanta to have to throw it a bunch.
Another question that kind of came in, and I think it's kind of following up on my question about Adrian Peterson, what to do with him. What do you do with Ray Rice?
You know, again, it's a guy who's not going to play in 2014, I believe. I don't really see anybody else signing him. He's certainly not going to be back in Baltimore. You know, they released him, and their backfield is awfully deep right now. While I think he could have a shot at playing again in the league, and maybe in one of those dynasty formats, he's worth keeping around as your last bench spot. You know, but any other format, 2014 is not going to see Ray Rice or Adrian Peterson, I don't believe.
There's a lot of season left for a lot of teams. Is there somebody that's on a lot of waiver wires right now you think that people ought to be looking at and see if they have and maybe being able to kind of, maybe not this week, maybe not next week, but down the road it's going to be able to kind of perform for them? Is there somebody kind of out there right now that you're kind of high on that might be on a waiver wire somewhere?
You know, there's always a handful of wide receivers that intrigue me throughout the year that, you know, sit out there on waivers. I just picked up Brandon LaFell. You know, he's probably not going to be on as many waivers after he had a 100-yard game. And really did kind of look like the number one wide receiver for Tom Brady. You know, a couple other guys that are more like deeper league you might want to consider because they're not seeing playing time just yet. One hasn't even played at all is Odell Beckham. And I just think he's an incredibly dynamic talent, and I expect the Giants to get him pretty involved once he's able to come back, which might be as early as this week. Also like Davante Adams in Green Bay, who seems to supplant Jarrett Boykin as the number three receiver there. If anything were to happen to Jordy Nelson or Randall Cobb, you know, he'd be stepping into one of the best passing offenses in football, and it could be really productive. At running back, a guy I really, really want to stash if I can find some bench room for him is actually Joseph Randall. Has done next to nothing, you know, since DeMarco Murray's been the best back in football so far. But, you know, Murray's had some problems with health in the past. He's getting an awful lot of touches. If he were to break down, I love that offensive line in Dallas. I think Randall would be a standout and a guy you'd have to start every week.
All right, last couple of questions here for Luke Hoover, Luke Hoover of RotoWire. PPR league, D-Jax or Cook?
You know, being that it's PPR, I'd lean towards Cook, you know, in particular because Washington's going against Seattle on Monday night, so that's a rough matchup for him.
And also PPR league, Jennings or Bradshaw?
Is that Rashad Jennings?
Just says Jennings, back? I would assume it's Rashad.
Yeah, imagine it would be Rashad. I'd give him a little bit of an edge because how bad that Atlanta defense is. You know, again, he should dominate more of the touches in his backfield than Bradshaw will. So even though Ahmad's been very consistent, I'd give the nod to Jennings.
All right. Awesome. Luke, it's always great to hear from you. Anything else I need to be doing to make my fantasy team better without you actually looking at my roster?
You know, I always say play the guys that are getting the most, you know, snaps. Play the guys that are on the field the most. They're going to be the productive guys. You know, it's not often the guys need necessarily drafted highly. You know, Doug Martin, who you might have taken high, is struggling. In particular, I'm talking about benching a guy like Cordarrelle Patterson, who you expected to be a number two, bordering on a number one wide receiver this year with all his talent. You know, it's just not happening right now in Minnesota. Until they start getting him the football the way they should, he's got to be on your bench.
Yeah, he's on mine. All right, Luke, appreciate the time.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, that's Luke Hoover of RotoWire. Our fantasy football report brought to you by Cunningham's Journal, your fantasy football headquarters. They got over two dozen high-definition televisions, giant HD projection TV, free Wi-Fi that allows you to follow all your fantasy teams on your mobile devices. Of course, they have the NFL Red Zone and the NFL Sunday Ticket. The Sunday Ticket thing is really kind of sweet because there's a game on everywhere. There's an NFL game on at least one TV. It's also where you need to head for that Husker-Michigan State game. Bring your friends on down. They have a wide variety of appetizers, sandwiches, pizzas, wings, burgers. They'll make you be very happy in standing up and cheering for that great food they have down at Cunningham's, as well as the coldest draft beer in town. Head to Cunningham's for every NFL and major college football game all season long. And don't forget about the courtyard and the loft. Three bars in one. Cunningham's Journal, 23rd Street in downtown Kearney. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back right after this.
Hi, this is Michelle Henke, Executive Director of the United Way of South Central Nebraska, and I invite you to get connected. In an effort to increase connections and relationships between local agencies and community members, the United Way of South Central Nebraska offers an online system called Get Connected. You simply log on to UnitedWaySCNE.org to start your journey. Get Connected is an amazing tool for finding resources, events, and volunteer opportunities. For details, call us at 402-461-8412.
Kelly Tucker has worked at Anderson Brothers for over 30 years. He encouraged his kids to check out college and something else.
Come see us. We'll train you. That's what we've been good at doing. I've always said that Anderson Brothers is more like a college, and that's why I call it Anderson Brothers College, because we do train a lot of people, and they can take that anywhere they go. And there's good wages. There really are. You got to work for it, but there's good wages.
Check out the career options at Anderson Brothers Electric, Plumbing, and Heating in Kearney and Holdridge.
Hastings Physical Therapy, the standard for excellence in one-on-one care, is proud to offer Hastings' first and only on-site aquatic therapy pool, featuring state-of-the-art heated therapy pool technology with private locker rooms. Providers to Hastings College, The Danger, and South Central Nebraska. Make us your choice when you need physical therapy. Open 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. and conveniently located next to Applebee's on Osborne Drive West. Visit HastingsPhysicalTherapy.com to tour all of our services or call 402-462-2665.
This weekend only, Storm Hockey is on Classic Hits 98.9.
The Storm got the start they were looking for last week in Lincoln. It was Chris Wilkie who scored a goal to give the Storm a come-from-behind 4-3 win over Lincoln. Now this week, they'll turn to their netminders. Once again, Alec Dillon and Blake Wyrick got to score some goals if they're going to win games this weekend at home against Sioux Falls and on the road against the Des Moines Buccaneers.
The puck drops Friday at 7:30, Saturday at 7:05 on Classic Hits 98.9.
The Village Green at Good Samaritan Society Hastings Village offers seniors a comfortable lifestyle in a caring community. The Village Green is designed to accommodate those who require a little extra. Apartments feature full kitchen, spacious living room, accessible bathroom, and an emergency call system. Services include a noon meal, housekeeping, and transportation. The Village Green can help you maintain your independence with services to keep you safe and healthy. Contact Hastings Village or find us on the web at good-sam.com.
Welcome back to the Midway Chevrolet broadcast booth here on the Doug and Daddy Show. Don't forget, today is, well, the whole month is Chevy Truck Month, the month of October. They've got supplier pricing on the Silverado 1500 LTs. The Silverado 1500 LT double cab has $3,250 customer cash plus supplier pricing plus $500 in bonus cash plus $1,500 in trade assist. You know, you put all that together, you're looking at over $3,200 in bonuses with that. The crew cab that they've got there, a 1500 LT crew cab, has $2,000 customer cash plus supplier pricing plus $500 in bonus cash plus $1,500 in trade assist. I think you're getting the idea here. Silverado 1500 LT, which is a double cab, $3,500 customer cash plus supplier pricing plus another $500 in bonus cash, plus $1,500 in trade assists. So some great deals, including Tahoes and Suburbans, $2,500 customer cash, plus $2,000 bonus cash, and 0% financing for 60 months. You get the cash and the 0% for 60-month financing, $4,500 in customer cash and bonus cash. So check them out. Head on down there or find them online. Join Midway in the fight against breast cancer this month as well. Test drive any Chevrolet vehicle in October, and Midway will contribute $10 toward the American Cancer Society's Making Strides Against Breast Cancer program. And don't forget, they have the Buick model closeout, 0% for 60 months, plus rebates on most 2014 models. Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram select models are $1,500 fast start cash if you purchase by the 16th. So that isn't the full month. That one will end the 16th, and the rest of the deals that we mentioned are all month long at Midway Chevrolet, Buick, Cadillac, Midway, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram. Like Think Midway on Facebook. Complete inventory online at thinkmidway.com. Midway Auto Dealership, South 2nd Avenue in Kearney. Midway, it's the better way. And I love this time of year. You still have high school football. There's some great matchups coming up. Kearney High will be in Lincoln. And again, that game tomorrow afternoon will be on Classic Hits 98.9 FM. Pregame will be at 4. Kickoff will be at 4:30. We will follow that on Classic Hits 98.9 both tomorrow and on Saturday. Storm Hockey will be on Classic Hits 98.9. So if you're looking for Storm Hockey, it'll be on Classic Hits 98.9. Both Friday, their home opener against Sioux Falls, as well as when they hit the road to take on Des Moines on Saturday. Of course, Saturday we'll have coverage of college football in Nebraska and Michigan State on the Breeze. We'll be using the Breeze a lot for some great sporting events because the Royals will be on the Breeze the next few nights. The game tonight, which first pitch is at tonight, first pitch is 8:07, 8:37 on Friday night. Both of them in L.A., well, actually in Anaheim, to take on the Angels at the Big A. Both of those games will be on the Breeze 94.5, and then back on Sunday we'll also have them on the Breeze as well, and that'll be another night game. First pitch will be at 6:30 Sunday night, so all those games will be on the Breeze as we'll be following that. Plenty of high school football right here on ESPN Radio, Kearney Catholic Central City, and in Hastings, our station in Hastings, KICS, the ESPN station in Hastings, will have Skyler taking on Hastings High, as the Tigers have had a pretty solid year, as they'll be taking on Skyler. So, and again, a myriad of other football games we'll have. In fact, we'll have a game, actually, we don't do this a lot, but we will have a game that we wanted to put on the air, but thankfully, the Royals won, but we want to do the Sutton-Donovan-Trumbull game, and that game will be on KLIQFM.com, or simply log on to our prep sports our website that has all the information, great stories, pictures, all that. That is PlatteRiverPreps.com, and that'll be a great way to do that as well. You like the Royals. You like the Royals coming in and winning in Anaheim at least a couple of games, because you said that they're the team that you think is going to win the American League.
Well, you got to remember, I'm a Royal fan. Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I'm basing this just on, hey.
It's the heart, it's not the head?
Yeah, that's
all right.
That's...
What does the head say? What does the head say? And we won't hold it against you. What does your head say?
Well, the Dodgers look really tough to me. The L.A. Dodgers in the National League. I mean, if you're looking for somebody that I think with their pitching, you know, I mean, they've got a guy out there in this Wainwright matchup. That's the second best pitcher in baseball, is Wainwright, and he's pitching against the best guy tonight. So what a very interesting series this St. Louis LA Dodger thing is. And then you've got a couple guys from Kansas City and the Angels that haven't been around there much. You know what I mean? So if you're real honest about it, if you're with my heart, hey, any of these eight teams could win it. But, you know, the odds are it's going to be probably somebody like the Dodgers. Their second-best pitcher is not bad.
Yeah. What's fascinating to me about baseball, rarely in football do you look at the eight teams in the playoffs and say, you know, the eighth team here really has a legitimate shot. You know, you don't really say that much in football. You really can kind of analyze it because, again, great baseball teams still lose one-third of their games through the course of the year. Well, you know, a great baseball team still lose a third. So it's a whole lot harder. I think the Royals can do it. I really do think that they could probably. Again, I would not absolutely be shocked to see an all-Missouri, you know, a rematch of the 85 World Series.
Yeah, it's possible.
Because the Cardinals, they're that team, and they're my example there. So many times they've been able to come through and win when you look on paper and they weren't as good as you thought they were. Well, I mean, they're not that good, but then they go out and they win the whole thing. Well, so anybody can do it.
Yeah, this year there's three of those possibilities. The Nationals in Baltimore could be playing.
Yep.
You know, and you've got the Dodgers and the Angels that could be playing.
Yep.
And then you've got, like you said, the Royals and St. Louis could be playing. So you've got, you know, three possibilities.
Four.
Yeah. What's the other one?
Well, I mean, you got the Beltway. You have the L.A. No, you're right. It's only three. I miscounted.
Yeah.
I can't even count.
Yeah,
because Detroit isn't going to be.
There's
not something like that for them.
Yeah.
So I sit corrected. I'm not standing.
No, I wasn't mad at you. Yeah, I thought if you had another one, I just can't count.
Well, I can't count. And it's, you know, and I had enough fingers. Well, I should have been able to handle but I didn't.
If Oakland would have beat Kansas City, you had it possibly with that San Francisco-Oakland thing. So, right.
Yeah, the way that goes. Anyway, don't forget all the games will be, and we'll have playoff games right here on ESPN Radio coming up as well as we go through here. Some of that will be preempted by high school sports, the NFL, and that sort of thing, but a lot of Major League Baseball playoff games right here on ESPN Radio. And don't forget, we'll have all the games for the Royals on the Breeze 94.5. Jim, as always, it's good to hear from you, man.
Yep.
And tomorrow, you get to try to make people money around here.
Oh, we'll see. All right, thanks.
Well, you've been on a roll. You can't deny it. We certainly want to say thanks to all of our guests, Luke Hoover, who we have on every Thursday, talking a little fantasy football, as well as Paul Konendike, who is a real expert on Spartan football for Spartan Magazine, as Michigan State, Nebraska. We'll be kind of talking about that tomorrow, getting you all set up for what is going to be the biggest game of the year for the Huskers, at least up to this point. And if they win that one, they'll all be very important, because they will have a legitimate shot if they win out, if they win on Saturday, to get everything done that Husker fans want to do. But first things first, they got to find a way to win at Sparty. Want to thank you guys for joining us, and we'll be back with more of the Doug and Daddy Show tomorrow at 11 right here on ESPN Radio.